Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to be having a chat with a man here who is truly one of the great songwriters on earth and a great legend. Please welcome Paul Simon. Now, this new record, Surprise, is a brilliant record. You must be very pleased with it.
Thank you so much.
But I suppose the first question must be, it's 6 years since the last record. Why so long?
The reason it took so long was 9/11. That stopped everything for a lot of people, I think. And my 60th birthday, that stopped me.
Yeah.
Then I had to think, really, what do you have to say at this point that isn't stupid and is the truth?
On the new CD, Simon brings his poetic observations to bear on the subject of war, from the cultural to the battlefield. He performed the haunting Northeast at Time Magazine's gala for the 100 people who shape our world, which, of course, includes him.
How can you live in the Northeast? How can you live in the South?
What are you saying to us in that one?
Everybody has a good reason for being who they are and living where they are. And their reason, you know, it's from the same heart. It's just human heart.
Who's gonna love you when your looks are gone? Tell me who's gonna love you when your looks are gone?
Singer Paul Simon was honored last night for his musical achievements. In a ceremony in Washington, D.C., he was presented the Library of Congress Gershwin Prize for Popular Song. The award recognizes an artist who uses music as cultural expression.
God will, like he waters the flowers on your windowsill. Take me, I'm an ordinary player in the key of C.
Most of the time you'd be out of popular music by this age. Getting into it and being a songwriter was an idea that I had when I was 14. And now I'm still doing this same idea. It was a 14-year-old's idea.
Who's gonna love you when your looks are gone?
This is the emergence of Paul Simon. I'm Paul Ingalls. In this special series of programs, we pick the moments in the careers of important musicians, a few years, a few albums, and explore how their music, their words, their voices, managed to connect so strongly with so many at those times. And by doing this, we hope to understand their ongoing contribution to music. On this program, Paul Simon. We'll talk with writers, musicians, fans, and hear archival interviews with Simon, as well as his music from the mid-1960s, when he emerged as an important creative force, as a writer and performer with his childhood friend Art Garfunkel, in Simon and Garfunkel. Then we'll explore his first two releases of the early 1970s as he emerged as a solo performer. Finally, we'll recall a third time when he re-emerged to the top of the world's music scene with his critically acclaimed Graceland album. Here's a preview of where we're heading in the next couple of hours. Anthony DeCurtis writes for Rolling Stone magazine.
Simon is one of those artists who's been able, at various points in his career, to become part of the cultural discussion in significant ways. You know, I mean, a lot of artists get that once, you know, a handful, you know, get it twice, and very, very few are able to just kind of enter it again and again, and Paul Simon is one of those.
Singer-songwriter Sean Colvin.
There's something about Paul Simon. Just the records, the production, the ideas, the lyrics, you know, he's got some range, you know. Just exquisite stuff.
I hear the drizzle of the rain like a memory, it falls soft and warm, continuing, tapping on my roof and walls.
New York DJ Pete Fornatel.
My line has always been that Simon and Garfunkel raised the IQ of rock and roll single-handedly by about 10 points. You know, they were not talking to kids or to just teen concerns about cars or girls or homework or teachers. You know, they were using this form, rock and roll, to talk about issues and relationships and mortality and disillusionment and alienation. It was extraordinary.
Why don't we stop fooling ourselves?
game is over, over, over. No good times, no bad times. There's no times at all, just the New York Times. Sitting on the windowsill near the flowers.
Ann Powers of the Los Angeles Times.
Simon and Garfunkel were the counterculture heroes that your parents could listen to and the kids could listen to. They really brought the counterculture to the suburbs, in a sense. And that's not to disparage them or say that they were, you know, like more soft or more sold out or something than say, Dylan or something. They had the ability, and Paul Simon has the ability in his songs, to state the messages of youth in a language that goes beyond the vernacular of youth. Let's put it that way.
Kathy, I'm lost, I said, though I knew she was sleeping. I'm empty and aching and I don't know why. Counting the cars on the New Jersey Turnpike, they've all come to look for me.
I think that beauty in Simon and Garfunkel's music, I think, finally began to wear on Paul Simon. I think finally he just wanted to sing in his own voice and do the things that and say the things that he wanted to say in his own voice.
Greg Kot writes about music for the Chicago Tribune.
You look at a song like Mother and Child Reunion, coming out in the early 70s, and there's a reggae group on this, you know? There weren't a whole lot of reggae songs on the American airwaves in the early 70s. And here Paul Simon, one of the most wealthiest pop stars on the planet at the time, experimenting with this kind of, you know, non-traditional groove in a song.
No, I would not give you false hope on this strange and mournful day. But the mother and child,
music historian Ashley Kahn.
He's always been in a big-eared way. I mean, he has always been an integrationist. He's always been a musical detective, you know. The way that he employed American gospel music, especially the quartet tradition on Loves Me Like a Rock.
When I was a little boy,
when I was just a boy,
the devil called my name.
When I was just a boy,
I say now.
But there's also this period where Simon becomes the quintessential New Yorker, the same way that Woody Allen is the quintessential New Yorker. He's playing that role of the kind of upper middle class, cosmopolitan, Jewish intellectual. And if for nothing else, those records are incredible documents of a period of time in American urban culture and intellectual life.
I met my old lover on the street last night. She seemed so glad to see me. I just smiled. And we talked about some old times, and we drank ourselves some beers. Still crazy after all these years. Oh, still crazy after all these years.
Writer Jim Fusilli.
Paul Simon went through a period where I thought he was really too deep in the middle of the road, crooning his songs. He was really working with music of the past at that point. And I think he was really grappling to find a new way to communicate. And I think the music of South Africa gave that to him.
It was very smart. It was very musically compelling and just satisfying in every way. It was one of those projects that, you know, that the first time you heard it, it just, you know, it just knocked your head back a little bit, and you just thought, wow.
She looked me over and I guess she thought I was all right. All right in a sort of a limited way for an off night. She said, don't I know you from the cinematographer's party? I said, who am I to blow against the wind? I know. I've said what I've said. You come and we go. That's the thing that I keep in the back of my head. I know. I've said what I've said. You come and we go. That's the thing that I keep in the back of my head.
Paul Simon, interviewed in 1986.
Curiosity is what makes you do what you're going to do. That's the most fun part, is to allow your curiosity to lead you. It's not necessarily so that I'll be interested in another cultural form of music. I mean, I really don't know. I mean, the fun is to see what it is that you want to do and what you're interested in, and then try and make it as good as you can.